In 1916, Thomas charged John with using abusive language. They were brothers. At court, John admitted to saying those words. Words that were not printed, due to the offensiveness of them at the time. Although calling someone a scab in 1920 could have seen you with a charge of abusive language, John said the reason he'd used such language was due to a dreaded fear. His brother had moved the horse from a paddock where John had them grazing and did not tell him. John informed the court he had gone to Rosedale to lay charges only to find the constable was in Gormandale and he was unable to lay his charges and asserted his brother put charges against him out of spite. At court, John was fined 20 shillings, £3 and 3 shillings court costs, instead of 7 days in prison. Emma married the first settler of the Rosedale area. I can't find his name. What is known is that he was blind in one eye and of Chinese heritage, leading him to have the nickname Blind Joe. It's the name of the creek that crisscrosses Rosedale. Not a lot is known about Emma either, except that in 1859 she was drinking so much and using expletives, it brought her to the attention of the Sale Police Court. She had sworn at a police officer who had suggested she go home. I asked the listeners what they thought should happen as a result of this crime. A suggestion by a listener was the stocks, 2 hours per day. The purpose of the stocks was to publicly shame a person. This punishment ceased to be used in Victoria, Australia by 1886, so it could have actually been a potentiality for Emma at this stage. We also stopped using public hangings by 1886, because they became riotous as the public rebelled against the spectacle. Which is why, after 1886, hangings were conducted in prisons. Before I tell you what Emma was sentenced, I just want to let you know, another man for the same behaviour was fined £5 and warned if he continued, he'd receive a prison term of 3 months. As far as I can tell, this is the only time Emma was in trouble with the police. So, the result for Emma was 3 months in prison at Alberton. The prison at Alberton was actually just the police lockup. It had 4 rooms, which housed more than 4 people. It was such a terrible place that Angus McMillan advocated it should be shut down and they should not have that many people in there. Let's look at murders or gun crimes, which occurred in the Rosedale area. In 1929, the brother of Andrew Fisher, the Rosedale Shire president, was shot. Albert retired to his room with his wife for the night. When 16-year-old farmhand Ernie called, saying, "Boss, come look at this," Albert left his room. Not long after leaving, a gunshot rang out. Albert slammed the bedroom door shut and said to his wife, "Good God, Ernie has shot me." His wife tended to his badly damaged arm. They left the house, fearing Ernie would break into their room and fire more shots. Mrs. Fisher returned to the house first, finding Ernie on the porch, clutching the smoking rifle. She asked him to put the gun down. He did. Mrs. Fisher picked it up, disarming it. She left the live cartridge on the porch. Albert had come up behind her and asked Ernie to get the car ready. Ernie pushed it out of the garage and started it. Albert drove them to another property, where the doctor met them. The doctor completed first aid and stabilised him, then took him to Gippsland Hospital for amputation because of the extent of the injuries to his arm and shoulder. The police took Ernie into custody and asked him, "Why did you shoot your boss?" He said he didn't remember shooting Albert. He only noticed Albert was injured, as blood dripped from his hand when he got out of the car at the farmer's house. Ernie was charged with seriously wounding Albert. Albert unfortunately succumbed to the injuries and never recovered. He died. The charges were upgraded for Ernie to manslaughter. Ernie said he didn't remember talking to Albert after they'd retired to bed, until he was asked to get the car. Ernie gave no reason for his actions. The court suggested he sleptwalk or was maybe insane. After 3 weeks of tests, the doctors found him, quote-unquote, normal, but noted he was apathetic and dull, or indifferent to what had happened. So I asked listeners what they thought. The Latrobe Valley Paranormal Detectives said they would need more details before passing judgment, but on the charge of manslaughter, 10 years, and if murder too, 25 to life.
Manslaughter jail term.
The jury in 1929 found Ernie not guilty for reason of insanity. The judge sentenced Ernie to a custodial sentence at the governor's pleasure, essentially an indefinite sentence for his entire life. In 1923, a new doctor started his Rosedale practice. He originally practiced from his mother-in-law's property. However, for some reason, not disclosed, he was kicked out of there after his daughter was born. His wife, mother-in-law, and daughter all continued to live there. However, he moved into a large brick home on Princes Street, Rosedale, near the Bunya Pine Tree, where he and his housekeeper would perform some procedures on women there that were illegal at the time. There are three known occasions, two resulted in deaths of the women. They were investigated as murders. The first death was 11 years after his practice commenced. In 1934, Catherine was 36 and married. She'd been living with her brother in Bairnsdale when she headed to Rosedale to see the doctor for the £15 procedure. The court would later confirm she'd been pregnant. She already had three children who were 7 years, 14 and 15 years old. The inquest discovered Catherine's kidneys were giving her trouble. After the procedure, the doctor suggested she stay at the boarding house, but at the school to recover before going back to Bairnsdale. In her sleep, she hemorrhaged and never woke up. Before leaving her brother's home, she didn't mention feeling unwell. He said she'd told him she was going to Melbourne. The doctor didn't even know Catherine's name. He only knew her by the last name, and couldn't find anyone in Bairnsdale with that name, because she'd used her married name. A resident at the pub suggested he look through her purse to see if there's an address or next of kin listed. This is when they found her brothers and informed them of her passing. Her brother was called to the Rosedale Hotel. Upon his arrival, he found the doctor drunk, who admitted that during the procedure, her organs had been nicked that led to the internal hemorrhaging and wasn't noticed until the boarding housekeeper found her the next morning. This went to court. Bail was set for £200. The trial set for April 1934. I asked the listeners what they thought.
Doctor shot, drop and stop. Like stop, drop and roll.
However, when it went to court, the charges were withdrawn. 2 years later, that makes it 1936, this happened again, only this time he had the presence of mind to monitor the woman more closely and send her to the Gippsland Hospital when he realised things were going wrong. Kathleen was 40 when she sought the services of the Rosedale doctor. She lived in Sale with her husband and three children, aged between 11 and 15 years old. She'd been ill for a few weeks and told her family she was going to Maui. After the procedure, the doctor realised she was very ill and unlikely to recover. He sent her to the Sale Hospital. When he received word she'd died, he injected himself with a cocktail of drugs. His housekeeper found him on the edge of consciousness. The doctor at Sale refused to issue a death certificate, saying he did not believe the Rosedale doctor about what had happened and ordered an autopsy. On the day the trial rolled around, her husband, a railway worker, was to give evidence. When he didn't appear at court, they searched for him and found him in his shed, lying on the ground beside the shotgun that took his life. The doctor submitted evidence in court saying Kathleen had said she just needed a clean out following a miscarriage, not a termination, and that he'd been misled. The prosecution decided to withdraw the charges permanently. In 1949, another woman under the care of the Rosedale doctor resulted in requiring medical treatment. The young woman came with her partner for a procedure to save her life. I don't really want to tell her age or more details about her because I know she actually might still be with us, as with her partner. Again, something went wrong, and the doctor sent her to Sale Hospital for recovery. The doctors were suspicious of how the young woman came to have the internal damage. This led to an investigation that resulted in the doctor getting a charge of illegally using an instrument alongside his housekeeper who had assisted him. So I asked the listeners what they thought, and here's their answers.
Why didn't that doctor lose his license? Hopefully it was more than a fine.
During this case, there was a jury convened. However, it was split. They could not come to an agreement. So, as a result of this, he was acquitted. In 1969, a court case was the common law in Victoria that was won to allow for these procedures to legally take place in some instances, usually relating to the health of the woman. The last crime story for Rosedale contains a discharged gun, a firefight in the main street of Rosedale. Is this one of the bank robberies? Let's have a look. At 12:40 a.m. 1944, the Rosedale mechanic, William Holloway, heard something. He went out to investigate. From his vantage point, he could hear and see shadowy forms of the bandits in his garage. He went back into his house, grabbed his shotgun, and asked his wife to call the police. He went back outside. Stop, or I'll shoot! With a clear view of the garage, he could hear and see the shadowy forms of the bandits. When the four men walked into view, instead of putting their hands up, the gang fired 15 bullets in William's direction. He returned fire twice. Third, shot at the wheels of the car. A satisfying sound told him he hit his mark as the tire deflated. The second shot was low and aimed at the legs of the men. He knew he hit his mark as a man howled in pain. The would-be thieves abandoned the stolen car and headed off into the bush on foot. A search of the vehicle revealed it contained all the things a gang of thieves on a spree across Gippsland needed, including drums of fuel stolen from the Sale depot the night before, including explosives for blowing open safes. So I asked the listeners what they thought, and here's their answers.
Bandits probably got theft, an attempted murder, or you know, probably a fine.
William's actions helped catch three of the four men within 2 days. Mrs. Holloway was also thanked for her part in stopping the crime. For the listener's interest, all of the men were employed at the time of their burglary across Gippsland, and they were not local to the Gippsland area. Thank you, listeners, for your time and your ears. I hope you've had a fascinating journey through the Rosedale crime. Not all of them were small time. I hope wherever you were, it was entertaining. If you want to support the podcast, you can sign up on Patreon or write a review. This podcast was produced, researched, written and narrated by me, Tegan Dawson, on Gunaikurnai land in Victoria Mowi, never ceded. Sound engineering and music by Aaron Austin Music. Next time on Haunted Hills, we'll be telling the ghost stories of Rosedale. This small town has big stories. I appreciate you all. You can follow us for more small towns big stories on the socials, Facebook, Haunted Hills Pod, Twitter at haunt_hills, or our pod website, hauntedhillstours.com.au. Be kind, thoughtful, stay healthy, and safe.